This podcast is a presentation of UCTV.tv, University of California Television. Like what you learn? Help others discover UCTV podcasts by leaving a comment or rating in iTunes.
Premier Zhou Enlai, on behalf of the government of the People's Republic of China, has extended an invitation to President Nixon to visit China at an appropriate date before May 1972. President Nixon has accepted the invitation with pleasure.
Each time that we've done this production, which is maybe this is the eighth or ninth time now, I always find something new. The Peter Sellers production, the world premiere production of this, is a very iconic production. We all remember, you know, seeing Air Force One on stage and a lot of very realistic elements. So I think when his team took on the world premiere of this, they were really inspired by actual images from Time Magazine, from Newsweek. A few years after that, we did a big revival of this for Opera Theater of St. Louis, which is where the production originated. And it's not that we were going out of our way to do something different. It's just that enough time had elapsed, 20 years or so. And we thought, well, what does the piece mean now? Many of us saw it. I remember seeing it on television.
You would have to conclude that this is a great wall and that it had to be built by a great people.
So instead of recreating the actual locations, Air Force One, all of this stuff, we wanted to take it one step further and look at the piece, how people looked at it at the time of the actual event. So we have 12 television sets with a lot of crazy footage that is often there for texture more than information. We felt as counterpoint to the nature of the piece, the sort of beautiful contemplative nature of the piece, we wanted this kinetic, excited, giddy thing that only could really be achieved by television imagery from the early 1970s. That's a much more abstract approach to it. It's maybe a much more movement-based, ritualistic approach. But that's the way we felt about it, and I think it gives audiences a way into the piece that just might be a little easier. I do believe this sort of red box with all of the stuff happening inside of it allows the characters to sing and to express themselves in maybe a bigger way. They're not competing with the scenery, I guess I would say.
Richard Nixon is one of the most controversial presidents in our recent memory, and oftentimes is overshadowed by Watergate. He was this complicated personality that we see, and I think what's interesting about the opera is they've been able to incorporate this complexity of Nixon. from his outward face when he meets Cho, how he's presenting when he gives these speeches.
I said, we came in peace for all mankind, and I was put in night from our Apollo astronauts, simply achieving a great human dream.
And also the internal dialogue that is going on with him, where he blurts out, just because he has to say something, not in such a cryptic way that Sarah Palin would, but he oftentimes would start a speech, and you really are wondering where he's going with it. But he always seems to be in control of himself in what he's doing. And then, because he's so in control, he seems at times very gawky. Always trying to balance the razor's edge, to get more votes, to get to stay in power, to get his ideas through. That complexity, I think they've done really well with building a character, and sometimes a caricature of the man in that the audience can perceive. Oh yes, I remember that.
She came from a rather difficult childhood where she lost both her parents early on. And for anyone to kind of think about that kind of childhood or identify with it and know that she was able to overcome that and become an educated woman in her day and age, and then go on to become the First Lady, and that her focus as First Lady was to be a humanitarian was really extraordinary. Pat Nixon and Richard Nixon were very much in love, and I think this is the part of the Nixons in our memory that we, of course, don't know about. We don't know this side of political figures. And, you know, if you read about them, you find out that they were very much in love. They loved dancing. They were thespians. They liked acting. And they shared a lot of common interests. They were very passionate about each other.
Nixon was quite a ballroom dancer, and he prided himself on that. And I think that was something that they shared together is their dancing, which is a funny to think about in how gawky he was elsewhere. But in this production, we do dance a lot. And one that I was in before, we didn't have that. And we've been working on our waltzing quite a bit and a few tango moves. And
I personally love it because I think in another life I was a ballerina.
There you go.
I don't know. I just, you know, part of me just always wanted to be a dancer, and I'm living vicariously through Pat Nixon and her, you know, the dance moves that we get to do on stage. It's really a delight.
Yeah.
say he is a philosopher, and he's all his stuff is very philosophical, especially in the first scene with when he meets Nixon. But the more I read, the more I found him charming, actually, because he could stand up to Nixon and cut Nixon off every time Nixon would try to take a turn. He tried to turn the conversation to something that he had studied, and then immediately Mao would, oh, no, leave that, save that for the premiere, or oh, I spoke generally. I was, you know, just philosophically talking. But I came to like him. I mean, I really think he's charming and witty.
The plow breaking the furrow, cloth pierced by the needle, giant earth glass, and these men want to work and not turn back, dazzled to the dark. Echoes, shadows, and
the music is hot. I mean, it's really wonderful, and he has really great themes for everyone. I mean, Herb Arya in the second act is really fantastic, and it's stratospheric. It's really high and wonderful. So, there are great parts to sing, no doubt about it. So.
Character, and she's known for killing thousands of people during Cultural Revolution. And I mean, if you see the words from my aria, it's very powerful, and she's very I don't want to say angry, but she's very she has to get what she wants. There cannot be any mistakes. On the other hand, in Act 3, I see the other side of her, which is like normal human being, woman. She was his second wife, and so she didn't want to be abandoned like his first one. So she wanted to have a power so that she is important to him. And also, I think she really loved Mao. And that's what we are showing in Act 3, like mm-hmm. our old days, and when we met first time.
Right,
and
exactly, yeah. We met on the dance floor, yeah. Which is cool. And we do a little dancing. Uh-huh.
So. We'll teach this how to dance.
That his knees are hurt and that he has some hip issues and he's old, and but at least in that 3-minute scene I get to move like meet myself, so it's fun. And dancing is, you know, it's cute. It's a cute part of the show. And then it gets strange.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's talking about then the conversation he has towards Chenier's character, it's very dark, and it changes almost on a dime too. So.
I'm performing the role of Prime Minister Zhou Enlai. I think he was considered by the Chinese people as people's Prime Minister, and he always served for the people. He was greatly missed by the Chinese people, even nowadays. There are controversies about Chairman Mao, but regarding Zhou Enlai, he was just a perfect man. But I think as it was portrayed in this opera, especially in Act 3, he was not happy. He was worried about the future of China. He asked the question, I think, what this opera was about, how much of what we did was good.
How much of what we did was good? Everything seems so
very lyrical and poetic. I think it's pretty much what he was in real life. I think Miss Alice Goodman and Mr. John Adams have done a great job on this opera, also on the character of Zhou Enlai.
John Adams writes like very rhythmic music, and sometimes it helps to have people who are professional movers, like dancers, to keep things flowing, and they can be very valuable parts of the whole. It's like very theatrical. They're almost like kabuki, like scene shifters, and we did draw from a lot of Asian theatrical traditions for this, and I like that idea. There's just something about having dancers in rehearsals makes everybody else move really well.
One of the great challenges for us is to be able to constantly sing in that very rhythmic, very robotic fashion that in essence resembles the communist regime, the strictness of the communist regime.
Thank you.
was some very difficult melodic writing through the piece, particularly for the chorus in the Cheers chorus, which closes Act One. It's very instrumental in its focus, and it makes it hard to make sure that all those intervals are perfectly in tune and well set. The chorus has really taken to these challenging works, works such as Nixon in China a couple years ago, Assassino nella Cattedrale, Murder in the Cathedral, back in 2009, Peter Grimes. These contemporary works, they have really been some of the most enjoyable experiences for the chorus because we just love to work that hard to make the musical product happen. The challenge is the reward.
There's this word that is used to describe John Adams' music, which is minimalism. Minimalism is sort of the same rhythmic and melodic gesture repeated over and over again. This is not the case in this piece. Sure, there's elements of that, but this piece is so complex, it's so multi-layered. There are elements of jazz, distinct elements of jazz, elements of a big band sound. There are four saxophones. There's a trap set. There's the use of a synthesizer as well, which is, you know, in common day technology and should be incorporated into the orchestra. So it is a multi-layered, very, the sonic world is very conducive to the ears. It is not dissonant, but it is a piece that is very, very accessible. The music is incredibly accessible. It has an American sound to it. This is a piece of grand opera. You know, in grand opera, it has ballet in it. We have an enormous chorus as well. But the ballet has very tuneful, rhythmic tunes that you'll definitely go out humming, for sure. And then there's a moment that is almost like Tchaikovsky, a good 6 minutes of beautiful dancing that is reminiscent of a great Tchaikovsky ballet. Great opera, and Nixon China is one of those, a great opera. It all comes from the text. Everything is generated by the text. And what John Adams and Goodman have done is to not only capture these characters through the wonderful libretto and the words that they've chosen, but also capture the dramatic pulse. And in Act Three, as you see these impressions of these characters, their dramatic pulse is there. The same dramatic pulse that you see in Bohème, the same dramatic pulse that you saw in Don Giovanni, where you can sense these characters, you can feel their emotions through the music, through the way that it's set.
I don't think John Adams has written an ugly note of music in his entire life. And his music is upbeat, it's optimistic, it's never depressing. And there's a lot of music in here that will be familiar to people. Sort of this, this big band sound. The instrumentation has saxophones and synthesizers. And it's just such a glorious sound fest. And, it's a quintessential American opera. It's probably the American opera when you think about an event that people still talk about today. And these are characters that we all sort of know and maybe not love, but they're at least familiar.
As we see throughout the country right now, we're having a renaissance celebrating the American opera. And it's so great that San Diego is doing this. There was a great success with Jake Hagee's Moby Dick that I was lucky enough to be a part of. And the audiences saw that this art form, in English, composed by an American, can resonate to our bones.
You've been listening to a podcast by University of California Television. For more information about this program or UCTV, visit us online at uctv.tv.